cherry tomatoes. Rode down North Limestone.
Well, it's Tuesday, and that means that Bluegrass Bios is back on the air. Good morning, Lexington, Kentucky. Good morning, Lexington Sours.
Hey, how are you?
Now, you're on location, right?
of sorts, yes. It's UK spring break, so I am here in a very warm Gatlinburg, Tennessee, and just having a nice, relaxing week. But I'm excited that I get to call in and still be a part of the show this week.
We're joined also by engineer Ben in studio. How are you doing today, Ben?
I'm doing pretty well. So we settled on Bluegrass Bios, right?
I've already got the t-shirts getting printed up. I've hired a graphic designer for $250 an hour. So
fantastic.
I think at this point, either we stick with Bluegrass Bios or I'm going to have to take a Sharpie to a lot of merchandise. So Lex, you're down in Gatlinburg. What's going on down there?
Not much. It's been very relaxing. The weather's been really nice. It's beautiful here. We have a cabin in the woods, so just a lot of front porch sitting and
spring breakers at a cabin in the woods.
Yeah, I think I've seen that one.
I've seen it many times.
Are you doing hiking or what's going on there?
Yeah, we have today. We'll take some hikes, and then tomorrow we're going to go whitewater rafting, and then who knows what the rest of the week is planned.
That's pretty extreme. What made you decide to go mountaineering rather than down to Cancun or something like that?
I don't know if you've seen me of late, but Sun and I don't really mix.
Particularly melanin deprived, if that's a nice enough way to put it.
Yes. So, mountains were good. There was no risk of too much sun exposure. And it was just nice, relaxing. It was an easy way for us to all get out and enjoy some nature.
Well, I'm pretty glad that you could carve a little time out of your vacation to spend with us today. We're going to have a cartographer on here in a minute. He's actually a postdoctoral scholar in the UK Department of Geography. His name's Rich Donahue. Now, if you don't know what any of that stuff means that I just said, I have no idea either. So,
good.
We're going to explore that.
That is what we'll be asking him.
Yeah. You have some burning cartography questions, Lex?
Mainly, what is cartography?
Right. Yeah. It's sort of gone the way of like the divining rod, you know?
Okay. Well, and he does stuff digitally, correct? So it's different than what most people would think when they think cartography, because it's not just map making and going out and exploring. It has to do with satellites and digital imaging, correct?
Yeah. So it's like, from my understanding, taking all the many, many web pages and sites and sort of, almost the best thing that I can sort of think of, like the largest version of this, would be almost like a like Wikipedia, where you can bounce around from one area to another with hyperlinks and all this stuff. I could be completely off though, so we're gonna see how that happens.
Well, I'm excited to learn what he has to say.
All right,
and then at noon we have Bryant Carter of the Bryant C Project, and I hope all his fans are going to be tuning in to listen to that.
That's right.
And that'll be fun.
Ben's gone rogue on us.
Yeah. We recorded that on Thursday.
How'd that turn out?
I think it went pretty well. We'll see at noon.
We're going to hear some music?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Fantastic.
We wanted to try out the studio to see how it recorded, people playing live in it. And I thought it sounded fantastic.
All right, great.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Now, are you going to be down there for your beloved St. Patrick's Day, Lex?
I am going to be down here for St. Patrick's Day.
Okay.
What day is St. Patrick's Day?
It'd be on Thursday.
Thursday.
17th, so okay. It'll be Thursday. Yes. I'm not quite sure what we have cooked up, but it is one of my favorite holidays of the year, so it will be something.
And here it's just going to be a basketball game, I think.
Right, right.
Maybe some St. Patrick's Day stuff will go on around it.
Well, as a follow-up to the show we did last week, where we had Lisa Betts on, who owns the Felcha Irish Import Shop,
has the loveliest voice.
She is, yes. Mavernine of the Bluegrass. That's another little vocab word I word. Mavernine, Gaelic, I believe, for my dear. So she hopefully will be a friend of the show. I actually went into her shop and did a little bit of the Irish festivities on Saturday. So saw the parade, saw the blessed keg. And there was it's amazing, because, you know, I feel like I don't see a single person wear green for, you know, 11 and a half months, and then then it's just all saved up. I mean, there were more types of shamrock attire than I think I've ever seen in my entire life.
Just in the color, or in just shamrock on them, or
both.
Around them?
Yes,
or
both
in
the same. Yeah, I mean, shamrock tutus, shamrock sunglasses, all kinds of swag going around. That obviously the necessary green beer and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And there was a good turnout. It was fun. And then combined with Comic-Con, which was at the convention center over the weekend, too.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There was all sorts of interesting garb going around the pavilion on Saturday.
Around downtown Lexington.
Did you see a Shamrock Iron Man? Because that would be cool.
No, I did not. I did not get to cross that off on on my St. Patrick's Day bingo list. But if anybody saw one out there, please email it to us. We do have an email now. It's bluegrassbios@gmail.com. So
that's bluegrassbios, all one word.
All one word.
B-I-O-S.
Not case sensitive. So yeah.
Gotcha.
And if you want to get a hold of us. All right. So Lex, we're expecting our guest any minute now. So if you want to hold on the line.
Okay. I'll be here.
We're going to put some music on. We'll be right back in a minute on Bluegrass Bios. This is Lexington Community. We are back on Bluegrass Bios at the basement of Steam Academy at 123 East 6th Street. I'm joined by engineer Ben.
Say hi. Hey, hey.
And the disembodied voice of the lovely Lexington Sours.
Hello.
And we're joined
Technically, we're all disembodied voices.
That's true, to you.
to me right now, yeah.
And we have a guest in studio today. We have Rich Donahue, he's a postdoctoral scholar in the UK Department of Geography. He is, and I'm quoting him here, building a new graduate certificate and master's degree program in digital mapping. How are you doing today, Rich?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. Now, can you explain what that thing that I just said is? What is digital mapping?
Sure. The short and skinny of it is we've been making maps forever, ever since cave times, and things got very computerized in the 1980s. There was these systems called geographic information systems, or GIS systems, and allowed us to gather data and store it in digital formats and make maps on a computer. And then, of course, the internet happened and the web blew up.
I've heard of that.
Yeah.
It's a fun thing. And this has completely changed the traditional thinking about mapping and cartography. It is forced us to reevaluate how we represent geographic phenomena. It's given us fun new tools and possibilities for doing this. Mm-hmm. And there's a good growing demand and market for the kind of skills that are required to take geographic information and put it into the right format and put it into a web page and make it fun for the user to use and engage with.
What's the most common use that a user can have for the information that you come up with? Mm-hmm. Like, what are people most interested in? Just how to get from A to B, or
yeah, is this just a corporate thing, or does this go down to like Joe Blow on the corner?
Right. So yeah, when I first introduced myself to people as a cartographer,
yeah, where are your scrolls?
Well, it's funny. You think it's a joke, and on Arrested Development they made this joke as well. But one of the questions you get a lot is, hasn't everything already been mapped? Yeah. which is great.
Yeah. Hasn't everything been mapped?
Right. Yeah, you know, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Either that, or maybe the older generation kind of thinks of that Rand McNally map in the back of their car, right? So it's a wayfinding tool. It's to get, how to get from point A to point B. But we do a lot more than just those reference maps. We do what are known as data-driven maps or thematic maps. And so we're coming into a pretty interesting election season. So
I was going to ask, is some of that... If a candidate for office wants to canvass somewhere and wants to know where they're doing well and where they're not doing well, is that something that comes down to you, or is it just districting or things like that?
I'm sure they have some mappers on their team pulling that data, looking at that map. That's very important, right? Yeah, they want to know where to spend their time. But that's a good example. There's private data out there and there's public data, and data is great mm-hmm. when you have it, it's great when it's good. Mm-hmm. But a lot of what we do, what we train is basically the tools to say, okay, you have access to this public data, maybe. Mm-hmm. It's census data, even something very broad. Mm-hmm. And you take that, and how do you pull information out of a big data set? And how do you tell a smaller story with it?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so
are you looking at not just, you know, latitude and longitude? Are you looking at terrain and density of populations and things like that, or wildlife? Does that come up?
Yeah, those are all great. Those are all great maps and data sets for sure. And I think we think about maybe two big genres of the data and the maps. One might be a more human geography. This is, you know, social demographics. This is migration. This is economics, food, you know, scarcity, these kind of things. And then there's a whole physical geography side to this, which is really interesting.
Oh, you got vegetation in there?
Oh, for sure.
As well?
Yeah, vegetation indexes and minerals. You know, and there's certainly overlap. You know, climate is one of the most interesting things to think about and map right now, because this is when the human factors and the physical factors are really coming together.
Can you get pollution levels in there as well?
Absolutely, yeah. EPA has a great public data set available. Great. And if I use the word API, that's another one of our tech acronyms.
Oh, what is that?
This application programming interface. This is basically a way for us to access data on different machines and pull that in.
Right.
All right. So we're going to have a small production meeting on air here, because normally Lexington and I would use complex military grade hand and arm signals to figure out who's going to go next.
They do that combat style that we're about to raid a house.
That's right.
Where, you know, that's you
right.
The eye pointing and then the thumbs and then the...
Well, we didn't spend that weekend at SWAT camp for nothing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, SWAT. That's what I'm trying to think.
That's right. You're either going to have to jump in, or you can make like an owl sound or something when you indicate that you want to go ahead. Do you have any questions for Rich right now?
Well, I'm just fascinated by this, because we all use maps every day. I mean, I get lost walking down the street practically, but it's so much work. Why, or I guess, what is the biggest challenge when it comes to making a map or getting that data?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's always been techniques for making maps and tools, and, you know, it was a certain skill when you made them by hand, and a really neat one that is going away, sadly. The people who know how to do that are kind of retiring, and we're not being trained that way. So that was difficult, for sure. You know, computers, GIS systems may be difficult to manage. What we're looking at now to get into these web maps, you basically need the skill set of a front-end web designer and a front-end web developer. So you need to know computer programming. You need to know these various web standards like HTML and CSS. And that's just the tool to kind of bring it all together. That doesn't really speak to making good design choices about how to best represent a certain phenomena. So, for example, say we're looking at air pollution, and we've got some measures, and there's higher and lower amounts, right? And so how do you want to symbolize that? How would you, you know, would you think a darker color red and would be a good way to symbolize more pollution? Probably so, right? Rather than some other shape, you know.
And you also have to think about readability and legibility. So I guess maybe black would be kind of out of the question if you wanted to do that.
Yeah. Lots of questions like that. You know, the classic one is there's actually a lot of people out there with red-green colorblindness. So if you pick two colors to compare something, and you pick red and green, that's not going to work for a lot of people. So to answer your question, there's a lot of challenging things. There's a lot of technical stuff. I think once you get over that technical hurdle, then it starts to become more fun. And then you can really think about, what do I want this map to say? Hmm. Again, how do I tell a story with that map?
Do you usually start out with an objective, a thesis or a hypothesis, and sort of work your way towards that sort of scientifically? Or do you just kind of find something to research as you're studying an area?
Mm-hmm. So maps fall on somewhere on a continuum. And on one end of the continuum, we know exactly what we want to say. We've got that data, right? What we want to show, who won this primary election. Mm-hmm. And that is very much making a map to just communicate the message. Mm-hmm. On the other end of the spectrum, we have these very complex data sets, and we don't really know what we want to say with that. We don't know what the data looks like, and this is why we use mapping and cartography, and often with other forms of data visualization, right? So we'll live link a map with a bar chart or a histogram or something like this to look for patterns and explore patterns in that data. Once we call those out, we might say, okay, here's a story I want to tell now with this. Now we can move back toward that other end of the spectrum.
Gotcha.
Creating a map that, you know, tells a very simple, clear message.
And you want to tell a story with what you're doing, not just have like a list of facts and figures and stuff like that. Is there any sort of prose to it, or research paper type writing that goes along with that you have to do?
Oh, sure. I mean, I mean, that's... Stories are interesting, right? And we use that metaphor a lot with the mapping. And sometimes they literally are a story. You might create like a long form web page that you scroll down, and it has pictures and it has text, and then it has some maps to complement it. Mm-hmm. I think there's a Pulitzer Prize winning map from the New York Times called Snowfall. If you want to look that one up, a really top quality map, right?
And Snowfall is my favorite thing. I, you know, look at it every month.
Yeah.
You've just hit one of Lexington's top five favorite maps of all time.
Right.
What is Snowfall for the layman there, Lex?
So it was a long-form news article done. It's in several segments, and it covers an avalanche that happened. But it analyzes the people that were in the avalanche, but then how it happened, what led to it, where it was, where it went. And it's just... beautiful. Just the way it's created and the way it flows and the way they pull in things like maps and visuals to really show not just things like the physical layout of the mountain, but the events that led up to it, how avalanches happen, what happens, how rescue was able to come in. And without things like maps, the story wouldn't be the same. You wouldn't be able to see that visual. So there really is a very clear need for it, especially in a story like that.
Okay, this is the New York Times article from 2012 that you're referring to, right? There's a three-dimensional sort of helicopter fly through with different areas marked off, and it's telling a story visually. It's actually it's an example that's used pretty often in web design courses in the School of Journalism at UK. So yes, I am familiar with the Snowfall, now that you bring it up.
Yeah.
We're talking to Rich Donahue. He's a postdoctoral scholar in the UK Department of Geography, ostensibly a cartographer, even though it seems like that word is really evolved in meaning over the last, since the digital era has emerged. He's building a new graduate certificate and master's degree program in digital mapping. Now, that's a mouthful. How did you get to this point in your life? You know, I don't think many kindergartners wake up and decide that they want to do advanced coding and mine metadata to create graphical presentations. How'd you get to this point in your life, Rich?
Well, thank you. I'll tell the story. So I did undergraduate study in liberal arts, philosophy, political science. Didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life, so what do? You go back to grad school, right? Knew I liked teaching at the time, so I did a master's degree in education. I still really didn't know where I wanted to go. Kind of had to pay my way through grad school at that point. I started picking up HTML, CSS, started teaching myself that. And so, okay, I can do a little web design stuff, and I like the design aspects. I took a digital arts class, I think, at CU Boulder for my master's degree, and that was really opened my eyes to design questions. Oh, this is cool. And then I was living in a house with some really interesting scientists, and one of the guys was a geographer. He was getting a PhD in geography. I was like, what is that? I've never heard of this. And he was really cool. And if he hadn't been, I probably wouldn't have gone to geography. So it was, kind of opened my eyes to that. And I looked at it, and I went in. So I applied for geography programs, and I got into UW-Madison, a great program. A lot of the New York Times graphics mapper guys actually are coming out of Madison there. But So I go into geography thinking I'm going to be a human geographer, right? I'm going to study social science questions and talk about poverty and power and privilege and stuff. And then there was this course my first semester called cartography. And I took it, and it kind of brought together all the design stuff, and it brought some of the technical stuff I had been doing. And again, a really good teacher there just really made it fun and engaging. And I basically have been studying and doing mapping and cartography ever since. Yeah.
And you said Madison, yes?
Yes.
Yep. Where are you from originally?
I grew up in Colorado, born and raised.
You're born and raised in Colorado? Yep. Whereabouts in Colorado?
Durango, Colorado, southwest corner.
Oh, I don't know that. It's a good, Lexington knows it.
Yeah, it's right where the Colorado, Rocky Mountains hit the high plateau right there. So you got you have great mountains, and then 30 minutes south, you've got wonderful deserts, and you've got rivers, and it's a cool transition zone.
And then where did you go to school first?
Did a small four-year arts college there in Durango, Fort Lewis College. Probably a good move. I think tuition was $1,500 a semester there, so got the...
Yeah, I remember those.
Got the undergrad done and didn't owe any debt, so that was nice. I took a couple years off between programs, went through Central America, Guatemala, traveled.
Oh, did you? What led you to that? Was it the sort of Peace Corps type or volunteer or church? Or
not at all. Just wanted to go on adventure, I guess.
You just took off and left?
Yeah.
On your own?
Yeah, yeah.
With how much money in your pocket?
I think I saved up maybe $8,000.
$8,000?
And then bought like a one-way ticket. And it was... because I was like 21 and then landed in Guatemala City one night, which is...
Wow.
A big, rough, gritty, dangerous city. It was interesting, but...
What led you there? Why there and not, let's say, the middle of Africa or India? I actually have had a couple of friends do that in their early 20s, just like, I want to go see the world.
Yeah.
And I think Kyle did something similar to that at one point.
I guess you could call the Marine Corps. Sure.
So, but they pick places kind of like India or Europe. What led you to South?
Yeah, again, I guess I'm just really influenced by friends and stuff. I'd had a friend who had been down there, and he had actually like snuck in to call and like slept on one of the top of the pyramids at night, and was describing these weird energies and stuff. And he actually hitchhiked and bussed all the way back home from Guatemala. So I don't know, that story sounded good to me. I like Latin America. I've been to Mexico a lot. I love that country. So,
do you speak Spanish?
Yes.
A little bit?
Yeah.
So you're able to get along out there with...
Yeah, once I'm on the ground for a couple of weeks, it starts to come back, but...
And then when you got back to stateside, where'd you go next after that?
I got back, again, was kind of thinking about grad school, went and hung out in Tucson, Arizona with my sister for a little while.
There you go.
Traveled around a little bit, and then went to CU Boulder, very nice town.
Yeah.
That was fun.
What led you to Lexington, Kentucky?
Well,
was it a friend who mentioned that they like Lexington and the horses? And
this is a funny story. So,
please.
Grad school, as many of you know who've done it, can be kind of a rough go. And I certainly took my time, let's say, for this PhD. And it was partially switching projects. I had a couple of advisors leave. But I'd basically gone back and forth between mapping and cartography and back to human geography. Because I was studying energy and wind energy in particular. I basically wrote an entire dissertation on wind farm controversies, and you hear about all this NIMBY blowback against wind farms and stuff. So,
is there blowback? I've heard, other than the aesthetics of it, I haven't heard about too much blowback.
Yeah,
from it.
Well, it's something I spent a couple of years studying in some detail and trying to understand how these social movements mobilize, and they actually, you know, they draw on science when they can, right? Yeah. And they even, there's a kind of a creation of a new science, right? And they're looking into acoustics, right? Mm-hmm. And is there some wind turbine syndrome they talk about with all these weird cortisone effects and all this stuff? So, yeah, so that was interesting. But I was looking at the academic job market, and I'm thinking, how am I going to get a job as a human geographer? And I'm like, I've got all these skills. Why don't I quit grad school and just go be a web developer or something like this, sure, and make a map occasionally? And the timing had worked out where the people here in Kentucky were wanting to build up their mapping program.
Okay.
And we do have some great mapper folks here, and more critical. Mm-hmm. It's called critical cartography. We think deeply about maps and ask questions about power and who uses the maps and what interests they serve. So they wanted to help bring in some actual technical chops and some cartographic training into here, and they knew about me.
Oh, okay.
And so I was literally probably the month I was thinking, okay, I'm going to just bail out. I don't need this degree. I get this email from them, and they're like, well, we've got this amazing program we want to build. We've got this great position for you. If you can finish your PhD by August. And so this was March, and I like just switched, you know, I just dumped my other project.
Oh, yeah.
Taking on this new advisor. And I go to him and I say, hey, you know, is there any way you think I could finish by August? And he's like, no way. I said, well, Kentucky's got a postdoc for me. He says, okay, let's do it. And that was a grueling, horrible 5 months. Cost me sanity, cost me a relationship.
that relationship was probably not going to go in.
Obviously,
they can't stick around for 5 months of dissertation. It sounds like you dodged a bullet to me.
So well, and then the dust settled, and I drove.
Sure.
Drove out of Wisconsin and landed here, and it's been a good almost 2 years now. Yeah.
We're providing relationship advice to Rich Donahue.
Can't help it.
Postdoctoral scholar in the UK Department of Geography. Lex, did I hear you make a hooting sound over there from Gatlinburg?
Yes. And you've touched on this a bit, but in layman's terms, why should people care about cartography and about mapping? It's not something that that we think of every day, but as a technical sense. But what's the biggest reason people should care?
That's a good question.
You're going to make him jump ship again, like.
Or how can people apply sort of what you do to their maybe a day to day life activity that's important,
right?
To them.
So on one hand, okay, so for one extreme example, we would say it's really important to take good cartographic principles and make the most effective map you can. And so an extreme example might be something like the maps you build for like a fighter pilot, right? That's going to be put right up on their windshield, real-time display. You know, we can't have errors in there. They can't be like misinterpreting the figure for the ground, you know, and stick the bomb where it shouldn't be or something like this, right? And so there's places where we can apply these where we want to say, oh, this matters, you know, and even maybe just like...
Or using maybe the GPS in your car?
Exactly. Or, you know, that's probably a wider applicable example there, right?
Yeah, so, yeah.
And there's amazing work going into mobile mapping and taking advantage of this, you know, real-time geolocated...
Yeah.
Signature. And so, for the car especially, we can't be looking down and confused and fumbling with buttons. We're going to have an accident, right? So,
I've seen it.
Yeah.
I've seen people do it.
Yeah.
So there's an interface part to it. That's...
So, yeah. And, you know, and on the other hand, I want to say, well, maps can be really fun and they can be silly. And maybe we don't need to follow all these rules. And so this kind of brings up a little bit of a contentious debate, you know, through the decades, about the role of academic cartographers laying claim to mapping, right? And saying, we know the best way, we've done these studies, and you got to encode this kind of data with a saturation level of X, and all these things, right?
Oh, okay.
And And so there's an argument. So, well, mapping is kind of like this universal birthright for humanity, right? Everyone knows how to map. I've rarely ever
You've got to know where you are.
Yeah. I've rarely ever met someone who doesn't like maps, who says, I don't like maps. and there's lots of different ways to make them. I mean, there's a very interesting case where the Polynesians would build these maps out of sticks. And so you look at that. We would look at that and not recognize that as a map. It looks like this architecture thing with sticks, but they would actually take that out on the rafts when they were away from land and navigate with it. And so there's a wider question about what exactly is a map and what isn't a map, and who has the authority to make it and to say that's a good map or a bad map. And so what we've seen here with the web is an explosion of different mapping tools and companies making mapping products that aren't cartographically trained. And so this in part falls under a domain known as the public participatory GIS or public participatory mapping.
Oh, PPM.
And and it's also the democratization of cartography and giving the power of the mapping to the people to do it themselves.
Yeah, and what would you typically assign like the people to do something? Would you come up with a little, maybe on a micro level, can you map houses? Can you give us, you know, story? How many stories is this house? Do your neighborhood for us, do your block for us, or something like that?
Those are really great projects, and those can be very critical. And there's a lot of work actually going on right now in Lexington doing that. There's a group of colleagues looking at the rental markets and kind of trying to better understand the process of gentrification and where the land.
It's like something I might see on apartments.com if I look up like what's available in my area or something like that.
Possibly. But even more of a little critical edge where it's looking at land, certain landowners who own many properties, and a lot of these are in disrepair and these are slums. So just, you know, getting a better understanding of that geography through just sometimes going around and walking through the neighborhood and collecting data that way.
Would that be helpful for something like real estate appraisal or property appraisal or rent prices and rental pricing and stuff like that?
Yeah, it would be.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Have you thought...
I'm sure it's helpful with things like local restaurants or local businesses. A lot of times if you do a Google search of an area, those local places and small businesses aren't always present. But if you live in that neighborhood and you go to XYZ coffee shop every morning, you can put that on a map. And it's not just the big chains or the big businesses. And so having that mapping come from a small local area, I'm sure is incredibly helpful from an economic standpoint.
Absolutely. And I just... didn't supervise, but I sat on I was a juror. I don't know what that means, but there was this really bright undergraduate, and she did this final capstone project, and I was a juror and kind of gave her feedback. But she did just that. She basically worked with some computer science students to build an app that's going to basically draw on a growing database of events around Lexington, food, dining, art, these kind of things. And it just gives you this nice mobile app to walk around. And like you were just saying, it's...
Oh, we have the walking tours also. Would that be come into play?
Those can be great. That's fun case for maps. Yeah.
Have you tried anything from maybe ground level? Because there's sort of street view type stuff. Is that something you've dealt with personally? Or are you just looking bird's eye at kind of areas and stuff? Are you looking at things through a different perspective?
Like, yeah, those are fun. I remember a good friend of mine... cartographer, he actually took a video camera and put it on his car and like drove through Cincinnati and brought that into a flash interface for a map. And this was before this was like pre Google Street View, so it was neat. I personally spend a lot of time working on interface designs, and I probably should get down and dirty with the data more. I love it when someone comes to me with a nice clean data set and they've got kind of an idea what they want to do, and I'm like, okay, let me solve this problem for you, let's do that. But good stories aren't told without good information. So
we're talking to Rich Donahue, PhD on bluegrass bios. So you're in it for the education.
I Yes.
To some extent, yes. I mean, you want to spread this. You're on the kind of an explorer in this new field to kind of bring it back to, like, you know, traditional cartography. You're trying to bring back the... You're trying to bring to the masses that this is something that's worth studying, that you're trying to pitch this to recent undergrads, right? People who are sort of have this conglomeration of skills, you know, because the hand drawings of yesterday is the Photoshop of today, right? There's definitely a visual element. There are a lot of people who know how to code out there. Basically, what's your pitch for this program, this curriculum?
Mm-hmm. I think for undergraduates who are just graduating, maybe a liberal arts degree, they maybe don't know what they're going to do. The job market isn't looking too great. I would say the three courses that comprise our certificate program, it's a great kind of easy, quick way to gain skills and kind of figure out if you like GIS, if you like math and kind of stuff. And then if you want to go beyond that, then there's this master's degree program, which is going to have bigger, more collaborative projects and spend a little bit more time thinking deeply about the maps. So it's great for undergrads kind of getting out. We have a lot of non-traditional people coming back to this, and they've been doing mapping and they've been doing GIS for 10, 15 years, and it's just getting stagnant. You know, you can only make so many property boundary maps with a GIS before you get a little bored and you want to pick up some new skills. And in, at least in the geospatial community, the web cartography, web mapping stuff, it feels really hot to everybody. And so we don't even have to sell it. It kind of sells itself. People coming to us with that.
What are the kind of careers that you can get with a graduate certificate?
So I think we've seen data journalism really change over the last few years. And I, you know, New York Times is obviously doing the best work and the Washington Post as well. And you're going to have all your newspapers moving toward this need to tell stories with good data and maps. So that's a fun one to think about. There are a lot of companies that have data, and we increasingly have data with the geospatial signature now, and they need to see that. So they're going to be hiring people to help them understand their data and tell stories to their customers and their clients with this. There's a lot of work still with, like, in the government and non-governmental organizations, national parks.
That's one. That's a strong example. we want to thank you for coming in and talking to us today.
Yeah,
sharing your story. You can get more information about the program at newmapsplus.uky.edu. I'm not leaving you on the hook over there in Tennessee, am I, Lex?
No.
Okay. Yeah, you covered a lot. I think you know, when you start talking about all of these, you know, we've got all these little skills that we're getting in rapidly, you know, whether it's people who know how to do a little bit of this or a little bit of that, and you know, people like yourself, they took a little time, right, to figure out how you can put all these things together, and now you're a PhD, you're seems like you're enjoying kind of creating a new, like, niche sort of economy within all this digital information age. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
It's not lengthy.
No, it is. Yeah. And it's fun to teach. It's a really nice thing to see the student get it. I mean, it's intimidating at first, and then there's this moment of empowerment where they realize that they can control the machine. And it turns out, you know, everyone has stories they want to tell. Everyone's got that map in the back of their mind, actually, that they want to make. And so to allow them to open that up, you know, I don't just have them make the same canned map that I want to make. It's let's take these skills. What are you passionate about? One of the students right now, she's really into bridges in the U.S., has all this information about different bridges, wants to build an interface to allow you to explore that.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Good to go. Well, thanks for coming in, Rich.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot. Is Bluegrass Bios on Lexington Community. For Kyle, Lex, and Ben, we'll be back in about 15. Enjoy the music.